Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Hi there, and thanks a lot for joining me again today. I really do appreciate it. Hope you're having a great weekend. Lots to talk about over the next hour, including the latest on the monkeypox virus outbreak in the United States. We'll also learn more about the antiviral Paxlovid and hear about a new treatment for a rare genetic liver disease. But first, let's start the show the way we always do with our co-host, Dr. Fred Buchholz. Dr. Buchholz is a slew care general internist at SSM Health, St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Well, Fred, it's always my pleasure.
So let's just start out with the Biden administration has now declared monkeypox a public health emergency. What does that mean and what will that result in?
Well, you know, this kind of goes back. I mean, we have, unfortunately, some experience with this as when we first started doing kind of on a larger scale with COVID way back in the spring of 2020 with COVID. It marshals the resources, so to speak. So it improves with tracking, which has been to some degree an issue of just, you know, knowing how many cases there are and where they're occurring. It mobilizes resources, including vaccinations, which I didn't know this till today, is stored. The vaccines are in a strategic stockpile in Denmark, of all places. So, it starts to get those available to and allows the administration and kind of the rolling out of the logistics to administer this to particularly the high-risk persons for monkeypox. So it's recognizing that it's a problem, and then it's just mobilizing kind of the administrative machinery to kind of deal with this a little bit more effectively than, like, you know, frankly, it's been kind of what I would call ad hoc. It's just you see a case, you kind of deal with it, report to the CDC, and you go forward. And so it just coordinates the response a little bit more so we can deal with the outbreak more effectively.
We'll talk a little bit more in depth about monkeypox in the next segment on Health Matters. Let's shift ground a little bit here and talk about the CDC. It's easing COVID-19 restrictions. What does that mean?
Well, this is, from what I understand, is mostly around, you know, schools. I think the big thing is about schools. You know, we're now in the first part of August. So a lot of schools are going to be starting here in the next few weeks. There hasn't been much clarity about what to do in school districts, and you know, obviously, the last few years have been kind of a shifting set of, you know, recommendations about what to do with kids in school. And, you know, I think some people, like, legitimately so, I'm cautious with saying all these things about legitimacy, but I think there's decent concerns about the long-term impacts of some of the measures we've taken in the past for, you know, the kids that are developing and learning learning language and social interactions that are an important part of school, and what long-term face masking may do to that. When I say long-term, I'm talking years, not months. So they put out some kind of, I would say, kind of less restrictive recommendations. I think it's very much with the strategy and intention of keeping kids in school and doing testing while there and kind of using the vast majority of kind of readily accessible and easy tests to do to kind of dictate strategy about whether or not kids need to stay in school or not, with the idea of trying to keep kids in school and have them interact as much as possible, which is, you know, I think we all agree is fairly important and reasonable to think about at this point.
We're hearing a lot about Paxlovid and rebound cases, but COVID symptoms can rebound even if you don't take Paxlovid, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I think, Fred, just to think about with President Biden, you know, where he tested positive, from what I understand, he did take Paxlovid, had a negative test, and then had a positive test otherwise. I think there's a couple important subtleties just, you know, with that example and with this type of conversation about symptoms that are worth noting. One is, you know, we do medical tests, but they're not, in no way is any test we do 100% certainty. So if I was working with a physician taking care of President Biden, what I would do is needle them because I enjoy needling them is when he had that negative test, you know, how do you know it's not what we call a false negative versus a true negative? In other words, he still has disease. The test was just read negative when in reality it should read positive. This happens all the time in medicine. This is the world I live in. And so, you know, I think to the same degree with symptoms, people kind of waxing and waning symptoms. A lot of that is dictated not so much by, or I should say it's still dictated by the infection, but it's as much our body's response to the infection and in different phases of the infection. And I think we talked, I can't remember if it was a week or a couple weeks ago, where it's very common in my practice where people have what's called, you know, what I would call viral infection. They, and the symptoms either linger or they kind of a waxing or waning course or, you know, a variety of different ways it just kind of manifests. And that's to deal with, you know, the chemicals our body use to fight off infections, our immune response to it. It's complicated and no one person kind of remains the same. So none of this that we're talking about, Fred, surprises me. We've talked a lot about the Paxlovid rebound, but is it just really like the Paxlovid, you know, did the job it's going to do, it's off, and then because of people's waxing and waning courses, have a different response? It's hard to know. And again, if I'm being a needling kind of annoying physician that I can be sometimes, I'm like, I'm not sure it matters. I think with all this, a lot of once people are infected with COVID is just kind of reaction and trying to deal with the symptoms and see how people do. And fortunately now it seems like more people are doing well. You know, again, our practice was back in 2020 particularly is like you kind of did the best you could and hope they got better and a lot didn't. And so, you know, as the infection and pandemic has changed, kind of our approach to it has changed as well. So I'm not sure that answers the question entirely, but like this is what I do on a day-to-day basis is like the human body is confusing and we have a lot of rules and what I call heuristics or shortcuts we take to kind of see how people kind of evolve and how we deal with it. But what I would consider the good physicians are used to the fact that, you know, the best laid plans kind of fail. And so does the human body. We think we know what's going to happen, and the human body does something different. And that's the world I live in, I guess.
We're talking with SLU Care General Internist Dr. Fred Buchholz at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, help me remember, EvuShield, is that a treatment or a vaccine for COVID? And how is it used, and are people using it?
Well, so the short answer is yes. So it's another one of these monoclonal antibodies that their niche or where they position themselves in the market seems to be like, you know, when people are exposed, you could use this and for high risk individuals, it will prevent, you know, kind of just basically kind of builds up the antibody defense so that you prevent the infection. I don't know if it's been studied in this, but I imagine it's not too much different than some of the monoclonal antibodies we have that for people that do have infection, you could get these infusions and then it reduces the severity or may prevent hospitalizations. That's been the consistent strategy. I think particularly before we had Paxlovid, this was a strategy that was, I think, solid. The hardest part about it really is, you know, you have a fairly narrow time window to get this. So say somebody's been exposed. So, you know, as an example, say I'm a transplant patient. I'm on drugs to suppress my immune system. I saw my grandkid a couple of days ago. And then, you know, yesterday I find out that they were positive to COVID. And so you could take this drug to try to prevent getting more severe COVID. So say that patient calls me as a physician. Now I've got to get that drug ordered, which is available. I've got to set up an infusion center, make sure that there's room in the infusion center to do it, get the patient to come in. It's a logistically harder thing to deal with than, say, I'll call in a script for Paxlovid. So I think that's why the uptake has not been that well. It's just a more complicated system, and healthcare providers are humans too. And you know, I think everything defaults kind of the simplest way of doing things, particularly if you know it's effective. I think that's why it's not being used. And evidently, there's a lot of material that's been bought, and it's just kind of sitting on shelves, essentially. And it doesn't surprise me, but it is a tool that could be used. I just think logistically, it's hard for a lot of people.
COVID has changed the way we think about a lot of things, including there's apparently more cases of summer flu and RSV in July. Are you hearing that? Even super cold, something like that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've heard this too, and this is kind of my take. And I want to emphasize, Fred, that this is kind of more opinion and rooted in science, but it has some logic to me. So I'm going to, if you bear me, I'll try to keep this down to 30 seconds or less. But often when I would see patients in the summer, and I would see patients in the summer with for lack of a better word, colds, you know, some kind of what we probably were correct in assuming was a viral infection. We just said, well, you're probably going to be fine. It's going to be bad for a couple of days, and hopefully it'll get better. And, you know, I've said on this show, and you've heard me say before, you know, the average human gets about 6 colds a year, and so some of those happen in the summer. When we see patients now with that, we're always testing them for COVID, right? So we want to know whether or not they have, you know, they're have that disease or not. And a lot of times, particularly if they're coming to, say, the emergency room, they're getting what's called a viral panel instead of just a pure out-and-out COVID test. I'm not sure that's really necessary, but I'm not the one making that decision, so I'll let that go for now. But the viral panel is exactly what it says. It's a pretty simple test to do that kind of tests for anywhere from 10 to 20 different viruses, which include influenza and RSV. So my theory or my thinking with this, and I think there's going to just be more analysis to do with this, but is because we're just kind of testing more. This is a test that wasn't readily available 5 years ago. And since we're testing more people because we're looking for COVID, it's kind of like a funky math problem. I think probably there is still traces of those infections in the summer. We just weren't testing for them or looking for them because we weren't super worried about it because the peak of those diseases wasn't there. And we're just picking up more of it. That's my personal theory. Others are kind of concerned that it might be to, you know, if you go back, Fred, when we had COVID in the beginning, that first winter of 2020, we didn't have any influenza at all. I mean, none. So is COVID kind of altering the normal life cycle of a lot of these other viruses? It's certainly feasible and possible. I'm a little skeptical of that. I think this is more a testing problem. And I've seen that in some other areas too. We talked about vitamin D last week. That's another kind of classic one. The incidence of vitamin D is increased because we're testing it more. Probably in reality, people already had lower levels and, you know, I'll save you again my rant on vitamin D, but it's the fact we have a test and we're seeing more of it, more than like, are things really changing?
Dr. Buckle, thanks so much for your time again this week. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Fred, for letting me rant a little bit. But I always appreciate doing this and I appreciate the voice. So it's a really interesting times in medicine. So it's cool to talk about this stuff.
Dr. Fred Buckle is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health, St. Louis University Hospital. Coming up next on Health Matters, we'll talk more about the monkeypox virus outbreak. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters on KMOX.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Welcome back to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on KMOX.
Lots more questions about monkeypox in light of President Biden declaring it a public health emergency. CNN chief medical correspondent Elizabeth Cohen talked about that with Wolf Blitzer.
Wolf, this declaration, it isn't just words. It actually triggers certain actions. So let's take a look at some of the things that will happen because of this public health emergency. It will increase funding to be spent on combating monkeypox. It will also increase data to the CDC. States will essentially have to send more data to the CDC, which will help. It also increases personnel, more people to help combat this virus.
What about the short supply of vaccines for monkeypox?
That's right. Vaccines are really what we need in order to get this under control. So let's take a look. The CDC says that we need about 3 million doses for the eligible population. And that population, that eligibility, that number may go up over time. 602,000 have already been delivered. 150,000 more are expected next month. So it's getting there, but it's still not anywhere near the 3 million doses that are needed just for the population deemed eligible now. That population, that eligible population might be growing.
So bottom line right now, Elizabeth, what should people know about this?
What people need to know is that this is mainly an outbreak among men who have sex with men. Someone today said, are we going to go into lockdown because of monkeypox? And I said, absolutely not. Monkeypox does not spread like COVID spreads. It does not spread through the air. It is through very close contact. Right now, it is mainly through men among men who have sex with men.
CNN's Elizabeth Cohen. This is CBS News correspondent Jonathan Vigliotti.
Vaccine clinics like this one at an LGBTQ community center in White Plains, New York, are popping up around the country.
We're here to protect our community and ensure that everyone who's at risk is getting vaccinated.
The demand for monkeypox vaccines continues to skyrocket nationwide, with cases roughly doubling by the week in some states, prompting the White House to declare a public health emergency.
And we are going to do everything that we can to end this outbreak.
U.S. cases have surpassed 7,100, with six states reporting more than 500 confirmed cases. The vast majority of cases have been found among men who have sex with men. But health officials stress anybody can get it. At least five children have contracted the virus. Monkeypox is primarily transmitted through skin-to-skin contact or exposure to contaminated clothing or bedding. But it can also spread through prolonged close exposure to respiratory droplets. While it is rarely fatal, patients say monkeypox is excruciating.
It was one of the most painful experiences of my life.
CBS News correspondent Jonathan Vigliotti. So are monkeypox cases being vastly underreported? Dr. Larry Brilliant is an epidemiologist. He spoke with CNN's Don Lemon.
How bad are things looking right now, and how much worse could this get?
Well, it's certainly an undercount because it has a very long incubation period, monkeypox. It's almost 2 weeks. So the cases that you see now are a fraction of those that are coming down the line. But that's not why it's so bad, I think, Don. I think if you look at the 30,000 cases that we've had in the world, there have only been but three deaths in that group. So it's low case fatality rate. And in some people, it's very mild. But it is a cousin to smallpox, and you can't tell the difference between them on an electron microscope. And many of the lesions are the same, and they may have had a common ancestor. And the worry, at least for me and many of my colleagues who worked in the smallpox program, is that if you give monkeypox viruses enough opportunities to mutate and replicate and change, we're worried, even though there's a small chance that that might happen. So that's one of the biggest issues.
The smallpox vaccine, because you know, people of a certain age got that as a kid. Does that offer some protection still?
It does. Against smallpox, it offers almost lifelong protection. I guess around monkeypox, probably about 85% protection. But we've got a better vaccine than the Dryvax that we originally used in smallpox, but it's very limited quantities, and it takes two doses. So one of the good things about this declaration from President Biden is that it begins to open up our national reserve. And there's one more declaration that could yet come, which would allow the FDA to fast track a treatment for monkeypox, which has already been approved in Europe, but is not approved in the United States except under extraordinary circumstances. Well, so these declarations matter.
Well, let me ask you then, because the Biden administration has gotten a lot of criticism, right, for not moving fast enough to address this crisis. The White House is pushing back on that, saying that the current outbreak evolved rapidly and uniquely. What do you think? Is that true? Is that a good excuse?
You're asking an epidemiologist. For me, they should have acted when there were 10 cases. So I always think they're too slow.
So what should they be doing then to pick up the pace?
Well, they should be making these two different declarations. They should be opening up the stockpiles of vaccine. They should really be fast-tracking the treatment. And they should begin to embark on the same methods mm-hmm. that we use in smallpox, which was called ring vaccination or surveillance and containment. Find every case, find the context, vaccinate them. Make it available easily for people to get vaccinated. And I think we have to find a way to get it for only one dose, because people just don't come back for their second dose.
Let me ask you this, because President Biden's rebound COVID diagnosis, he tested positive again on Saturday after taking a 5-day course of Paxlovid for the first bout of COVID. And he still continues to test positive. Can you explain to us why? And let me just say this, that most of the people I know in my personal life who took Paxlovid got rebound COVID.
I'm in your life, aren't I? So did I.
You got rebound COVID from taking Paxlovid?
I did.
I had to take,
well, it's not really a rebound, and that's really where we get into more than just semantics. Mm-hmm. I believe that the Paxlovid dosing, which was treatment over 5 days, was probably adequate against the variant that they tested it during the trials, which was the Delta variant. It's simply not adequate in many people's cases with this new BA5. It's just not. BA5 is able to evade both the treatment and prior infection. So I'm hoping that as part of this renewed interest in all things epidemiological, we will see a new trial. And maybe it's a 10-day mm-hmm. course that's better than 5. We'll see.
Epidemiologist Dr. Larry Brilliant speaking with CNN's Don Lemon. Coming up next on Health Matters, we'll find out more about the Paxlovid rebound. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters on KMOX.
Welcome back to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on KMOX.
President Biden's COVID rebound case raises new questions about the antiviral Paxlovid. The president tested positive again several times this past week. What do we need to know about Paxlovid, or Paxlovid as some people call it? Here to talk with us about that is Dr. Farron Mannion. Dr. Mannion is the chairman of the Department of Medicine at Mercy Hospital, St. Louis. He's also an infectious diseases physician. Dr. Mannion, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
So tell us about Paxlovid. What do we need to know about it?
Well, it is a drug that helps treat the COVID virus, essentially, by preventing it from replicating. So it's a effective antiviral drug specifically for the COVID virus. And it is an oral drug, which makes it convenient. And you really need to start it within 5 days of symptoms. For people who have mild to moderate symptoms, it is not really designed for people that are in a hospital and very sick from COVID. This is really designed for people who have milder symptoms in the community, and it has been shown to be 89% effective in reducing hospitalization and death in people that have not been vaccinated for COVID, And it has been very effective, at least in my experience and knowing what I know how it's being used. It really seems like it's been very effective in keeping people out of the hospital because of COVID.
Who should get it?
Well, it's really for people that are risk of complications or high-risk patients. So, you know, people over 50 often have a lot of medical problems. And so for people over 50, it should be considered. People that are immunocompromised or problem with their immune system, it should be considered as well.
How common are these so-called rebounds?
Well, you know, I know we hear a lot about it, but to be honest, it is not as common as some might believe it is. There are really a couple of more recent studies that have shown that in one study, for example, the rebound symptoms was less than 1% of time when people were taking Paxlovid. Another study was, 2 to 5%. So, a great majority of people who take Paxlovid for COVID do not have rebound.
If you do get a rebound case after you've had Paxlovid, is it as severe or is it not as severe?
Yeah, it's a great question. The great majority of time, it is actually quite mild. The symptoms are quite mild. Occasionally, it can be a bit more severe. But, the studies that have at least been reported so far, it's been very rare for people to have such severe disease that requires hospitalization or be complication or have complication from it so severe that it causes death. So the rebounds are really, generally speaking, very mild.
Are older people more likely to get those rebounds?
Yeah, there's one study that showed that older people may be more likely to get it. That's true. But to be honest, we still need to have a lot more studies to get a really good feel for who is really at high risk. But there's at least one study that shows that older people may be at higher risk.
You told us that Paxlovid is given for 5 days. Do you think it should be given longer than that, maybe 5 to 7 days? Then that might stop some of these rebounds?
Right. So you should give it within 5 days of symptoms, and it is correct that you should give it for 5 days. It's a pill for 5 days. There is no evidence that either longer course or repeating the course actually results in any major improvement in one's prognosis. So right now, as it stands, we're still trying to figure out exactly why people have a rebound. I think right now it's too premature to say that we have to extend the course of treatment for everybody in case a few people get rebound. I don't think that would be necessarily the right thing to do, or that we need to repeat the course when there is rebound, because we just don't really have any evidence that that's also necessary or needed. So right now, the recommendation is still to give it within 5 days of symptoms for 5 days.
We're talking with Dr. Farron Mannion. Dr. Mannion is the chairman of the Department of Medicine at Mercy Hospital, St. Louis. He's also an infectious diseases physician. Dr. Mannion, so then what do you tell patients who say, I don't want to do Paxlovid because it doesn't seem to work?
Well, it does work, actually. If you look at people who are at risk, and again, older people, people that are immunocompromised, those are the patients that we really want to try to keep out of the hospital, out of the ICUs, and hopefully be able to prevent deaths as well. If you look at the study of Paxlovid and the impact it has on hospitalization and death, it reduces those complications by 89%, which is really huge. And if somebody is at risk of complications and they have mild to moderate disease in the community, and there are no contraindications to taking Paxlovid as assessed by their primary care physician, then I would recommend at least considering taking it. But you only have, again, a few days to decide, because, after 5 days, it's probably not going to do much. So you don't want to delay taking it. The sooner you take it, the better off you will be.
Dr. Mannion, Moderna and Pfizer now say that their updated booster protecting against the new variants will be available starting in September. Should we wait if we haven't had a booster yet, or get one now?
Yeah, I think that's a great question and one that comes up all the time. I can tell you that what I have generally informed people is that the current strain of Omicron, the BA5 that is really going around and it's been very widespread, both in the community and we're obviously seeing some also come in the hospital, it's so highly transmissible and what we'll call immune evasive, which means that, you know, the prior infection with COVID or prior vaccinations may not keep people from getting the infection. It will be very effective in terms of keeping people out of the hospital if you've been vaccinated, but not necessarily keeping you from getting infections from COVID. For those people who are at risk of complications, I still recommend getting the booster if they're eligible, because I don't know what the fall landscape looks like in terms of the vaccine availability or what the strain is going to be for sure. But what I do know is that there is a Omicron 5, quite widespread, highly transmissible going on in the community right now. And if you're eligible for a booster, I would go ahead and get it.
When you have COVID, how do you know when you're no longer contagious?
Well, you know, again, this is a great question. Before we had the rapid testing, which is available, over the counter, and also you can get it through the government, the rapid testing has really kind of revolutionized our ability to have a better sense of whether we're infectious or not. And the reason for that is that instead of just kind of guessing that after 5 days or 7 days, most people may not be infectious anymore, we can actually do a rapid test that is a relatively a good gauge of infectivity. And if that's negative, and you did it, properly, obviously, and if it's negative, then that's a really a good gauge of not being infectious. And as soon as it turns positive, then it's a very good gauge that you're highly infectious. So the rapid test that a lot of people have access to now, really has helped us decide who is infectious, who is not infectious. And I often, recommend it as a way of deciding whether you can actually come off of isolation or not, or be able to go back to work if you really want to try to minimize transmission from you to other people while you're recovering from COVID.
Dr. Mannion, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Dr. Farron Mannion is the chairman of the Department of Medicine at Mercy Hospital, St. Louis. He's also an infectious diseases physician. Coming up next on Health Matters, we'll find out about a local discovery of a treatment for a rare genetic liver disease. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters on KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome back to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on KMOX.
Researchers at St. Louis University School of Medicine report they found the first effective drug to treat a rare genetic liver disease that formerly could only be treated with a liver transplant. Here to talk with us about that is the senior author of this study, Dr. Jeffrey Techman. Dr. Techman is director of pediatric gastroenterology and hepatology at St. Louis University. Dr. Techman, thanks a lot for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So tell us about this finding.
Yes, so for many years, we've been studying a condition known as alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency. This is a condition that a lot of people haven't heard of, although it's really not that rare. It can cause lung damage in adults and liver damage in children and adults. And it affects about 1 in 3,500 Americans. So, you know, that's like 100,000 Americans. So that's, you know, not a 1 in a million disease by any means, but it's way underdiagnosed and underappreciated. And the liver disease has had no treatment. I mean, we have treatments for the liver in general if it gets sick, but we really had no way to stop this disease. Some people progress very rapidly as infants, and some people get sick when they're older adults, but we really had no treatment other than a liver transplant if people were really getting worse. And through collaborating with drug companies and researchers and people at our lab here at St. Louis U, we have released information, some results from a study for the first time that shows that we can not only stop the progression of this disease, but actually in some patients reverse it in the preliminary study. So it's a real game changer for a lot of patients and is incredibly exciting.
So tell us about this treatment.
Yeah, so the drug is been developed through Arrowhead Pharmaceuticals and then with Takeda Pharmaceuticals. Fazisiran is the generic name of the drug, and this is a drug developed with RNA technology. So this is technology similar to what's been used to develop the COVID vaccines. Around the year 2000, some scientists made breakthrough discoveries in RNA chemistry, RNA being a type of molecule in your cells that regulates how your cells work, and they eventually won the Nobel Prize for their discoveries, but their discoveries have led to many downstream treatments, including, as I said, some leading to the COVID vaccines and some leading to this new drug, which, you know, is amazing new technology when applied to this disease.
How does it work?
Yes, so in alpha antitrypsin deficiency, let me just kind of give the overview for a second. Alpha antitrypsin is a protein that's made in your liver in huge quantities every day, and it's released into the blood. And what it's supposed to do is, if you're fighting infection, alpha antitrypsin floats around in your blood and in your fluids and protects your own body from damage while you're killing germs. In alpha antitrypsin deficiency, you inherit an abnormal kind of alpha antitrypsin. Your liver still makes tons of it, but it doesn't get out into the blood. So blood levels are too low. The lungs are open to damage when you have infection, but the liver has too much, and the abnormal alpha-1 builds up in the liver, and that building up in the liver can damage the liver and cause scar tissue to develop and can cause cirrhosis of the liver, and there's no way to stop that once it gets going in this disease. And this drug, amazingly, tells your liver to stop making alpha-antitrypsin. It shuts down the production of that, just that protein alone in your liver, and with almost no side effects.
How exciting is this discovery?
Well, I mean, it's just amazing. I think that, you know, this is something that we imagined for many years. I've started working on alpha-antitrypsin in 1993 when I was studying at Washington University School of Medicine, and I was working with a colleague, my mentor, David Perlmutter, who had worked a lot on alpha-antitrypsin, and we worked together for many years. And our labs, as well as many labs around the world, spent a lot of time trying to figure out how this disease worked, and we showed that the bad alpha-antitrypsin built up in the liver and damaged it, and we studied how the liver coped with that. And we thought for a long time, if we could just tell the liver to stop doing it, to stop making the toxic protein, that would be a treatment. And then along comes technology that allows us to actually design such a drug. And through a lot of people's work, years of effort, and many patients volunteering for studies, we now have preliminary information that it not only is effective, but it has very low side effects. So it's an amazing game changer for this disease, but it may be a pathway forward to other diseases that have no treatments. And the next step is to do a larger study to understand better what the dose would be, to understand better how long people need to take it, and to prove to the FDA its complete safety so that we can get full approval and FDA approval for it so that it's available to everyone
How would you know if you're available to receive it?
Well, if you have the liver disease alpha and trypsin deficiency, then, you know, you would be monitored by your doctor. And if your liver was becoming damaged, then, you know, you would, in theory, be a candidate. The problem is a lot of people are with alpha and trypsin deficiency are not diagnosed. Since there's no treatment for the liver, and it's a fairly uncommon disease, although not unheard of, a lot of people are not tested. People just see their liver is in bad shape or they need a transplant, and there isn't always a lot of work done to determine what the cause might be, or people are mistaken what the cause might be. So I think if we have a solid treatment, that's going to spur diagnosis and more people are going to be tested and more people are going to get the right treatment.
Is this often misdiagnosed?
Yes, it's often misdiagnosed as either fatty liver disease or alcoholic liver disease. Unless you do the specific test for alpha and trypsin, as the liver becomes damaged, it appears very similar to fatty liver disease or to alcohol injury. So sometimes a doctor will see such a patient and they'll just assume it's fatty liver without really doing the specific testing for alpha and trypsin, because there's no other treatment, but hopefully now there will be.
What's been the reaction from patients who receive this treatment?
Yes, it's been amazing. I mean, it's a genetic disease, so it affects people in multi-generations and families. And so, you know, people are very invested for that reason. Their parent may have had it, their brother may have had it. They're afraid their children are going to have it. I've worked with the alpha and trypsin patient community since 1996, and people are very, very excited that for the first time that there's something that is on the horizon to treat the liver other than a liver transplant.
Dr. Techman, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Jeffrey Techman is professor of pediatrics and biochemistry and molecular biology at St. Louis University School of Medicine, where he's also director of pediatric gastroenterology and hepatology. And that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thanks so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. If there are parts of this show you want to hear again, please log on to KMOX.com and look under the podcast section. Or you can download the Odyssey app and favorite KMOX. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Please join me again next week for another edition of Health Matters on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.